95.7 The Rock at Lafayette's Classic Rock. We're hanging out with our general manager, Ernie Caldemone, and he's nicely agreed to talk to us a little bit about Woodstock. You were there.
Yes, we were, Rob. obviously, it was, 40 years ago, and as we get into the 50s, our recollection of things either get expanded or forgotten. So I think I put down some things to share with the audience. It was a great time.
Now, you were growing up in Brooklyn, and how do you remember first hearing about Woodstock?
It was all over the radio. I think it was WMCA or maybe WINS, the AM stations back in the late 60s, obviously. FM was just coming into its own, but it was all over the radio, and one of our friends scored some tickets. I think they were $6 or $7 per day, and that was it.
So you went with some of your friends. Who'd you go with?
We left Brooklyn. Well, first of all, I went with Sammy Sanchez, Randy Ryan, and her brother Mike Ryan, and Johnny Molinaro. So you had a Puerto Rican, an Irish couple, or brother and sister, and a crazy Sicilian and myself. So we were well-rounded. We covered all the gamuts. But these are kids that I've known since I was 5 years old. In 69, I was 19. So we had already known each other for 14 years. But what's great is that other than Johnny, who we lost about 2 years ago, Sammy, Randy, and Mikey and I were still in touch with each other. So it's all good.
So how did you get there?
Well, we left Brooklyn about 6 o'clock in the morning on that Friday. What was the city? The town was Bethel, I believe. It's maybe 40, 50 miles from Brooklyn, and Brooklyn is on the southern tip of Manhattan, of New York City. Mike Ryan had a 64, 65 Volkswagen bus that was, totally Grateful Dead out, peace signs all over. And so we left the city about 6 in the morning, and even I think it was Johnny who said, well, can't we just take the subway there? Because obviously not everybody had cars in those days. And in New York City, you really didn't need them. But we each brought sleeping bags. We had two tents, and it was like going to the beach. We made some sandwiches, PBJs, and threw in some snacks, and said, okay, here we go, and we took off.
Did you have any indication that it was going to be as big as it was when you were leaving Brooklyn that morning, or the couple days beforehand? Or did you just think, oh, it's going to be a good concert, big?
Well, we knew it was going to be an event, but we didn't have any idea it was going to be as big as it was. But we were thinking maybe 100,000 people, because even I think the pre-sale to it, as we found out later, I think they sold about 200,000 tickets. And obviously, the numbers after Sunday that they came out with was close to 500,000 people were there. So it was an event. It was a three-day event of rock music. And obviously, music of our era, of our time. And it was amazing how long it took us. We got out of the city with no problem. But once we got on, I think it was State Road 17, which it goes out into the country in upstate New York, the southern tip of upstate, probably about, noon or 1 o'clock, it just died. And we were just sitting there for hours until we finally got about 2-3 miles from the farm. And we noticed everybody was just leaving their cars on the side of the road, locking them up. And you see people walking with their knapsacks and sleeping bags and tents and food. And so that's what we did.
And so you get to the farm. What was your first view? What did it look like when you guys came upon it?
Well, the farm looked like a farm with nothing in the fields, really. It was hilly. There were some mountains. I remember seeing some mountains. We found out later it was a 600-acre farm. So if there's 500,000 people on 600 acres, do the math. That's about 800 people per acre, okay? So, but when we walked in and got situated, we found a spot where, we thought we'd set up the tents, and that's what we did. We kind of set up the two tents and left our stuff there, and we started, exploring to see. We walked down by the stage, and it really wasn't that crowded yet.
So when you guys got there, they were still taking tickets and everything.
They were still taking tickets and everything, yep. And so we walked down the stage, and we said, maybe we could get closer. So I think it was Sammy and I, or Johnny and I, we walked back to where we had we had set up. We packed everything up and we started walking back, and it was like all of a sudden, you know, people were everywhere. And it was literally like you were on a beach at Jones Beach on a Sunday afternoon, and it's like 90 degrees and you're kind of walking over people, over blankets, over sleeping bags and things like that. But we were able to get back, and when we got back, they were getting ready to start.
Mm-hmm.
And Richie Havens obviously opened the show, and we found out later that, and I don't know who was supposed to open it, but they had kind of chickened out when they saw all those people out there, and they really had to convince Richie Havens to do it. And he says, okay, I'll just play a couple of songs. Well, I think Richie had two encores, and he played for about, you know, two and a half hours or something like that, and it was just absolutely awesome.
So what did you do while you were listening to the music? What was going on around you and all that?
Well, I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but I'm sure I won't, because we all did it in the 60s. But I mean, you didn't even have to light up. I mean, it was prevalent all over the place. And I'm really, I think I smoked more stuff that night than I did through the 60s and early 70s until I kind of grew up. There was a moment when, because it was Friday night, it was later Friday night that the storm started coming in, and we saw some black clouds coming in, and everybody was just, you know, so lit up. There was a gal next to me that had said, wow, it looks like the sky is about to fall. And without hesitating, I said to her, don't worry, babe, if it does, I'll catch it for you. So she looked at me like, wow, you'd really catch the sky for me? Needless to say, we had a great night. Going into the next day, we woke up and everything was soaked because the storms came in through the night, and we got up, we were cold, we were hungry, and everything was all wet. And that's when we decided, at least our group did, but so did thousands of other people who were in the pond or in the lake or whatever it was. And, you know, there was no clothes to be found on anybody, yet people had clothes in their hand because they were washing them from all the mud that had transcended over the course of the night. So it was a pretty exciting first night. What we did later that morning, we went back to where, well, Johnny Molinauer found the Food for Love Pavilion that they had set up, where they were selling, you know, hot dogs and sandwiches, and they had pop and water, and there was a truck that was delivering a lot of food and supplies. And so while we were there, we started helping the guy unload the truck. And we probably worked there till about, I don't know, 1 o'clock or so. And finally, you know, one of the managers in the pavilion started, you know, escorting non-service personnel that weren't supposed to be there out of there. And we just looked at him and said, listen, dude, we helped you organize this whole thing. We're not going anywhere. So, but to us, that was, you know, we've remembered that and talked about that over the years, because it gave us food, it gave us shelter. But we also learned, and that's how we were. We were a team, we were together, and we were able to do that. So that was pretty cool.
Wasn't that one of the sort of overall vibes of the whole festival as it went on?
I tell you, I didn't see one fight. People, you know, it was peace and love, camaraderie, companionship. It was real. I mean, and especially with everything that was going on in the 60s with the war and everything, it was just really cool to be part of that, but also to recognize it. And you gain a lot of respect when you go through something like that for people. So it was pretty good.